The next case is number 05-1781, the United States against Milo Farris. Ms. Kim.
May it please the court, my name is Helen Kim and I represent Milo Farris. This morning I was just going to argue as to the sentence reasonableness for my 10 minutes. On March 15, 2005, the district court sentenced Mr. Farris to 120 months in the Bureau of Prisons. During the sentencing and before in written submission, the defendant asked for a non-guideline sentence. He provided evidence in support of a non-guideline sentence. And in this case, the district court issued an inadequate and an incomplete statement of reasons when it issued the sentence upon Mr. Farris under 3553C, Rule 50, Dean, Cunningham, and Booker. When Mr. Farris was making his sentencing arguments, he pointed to many mitigating facts and circumstances about his case that were directly tied to 3553A factors. He argued probably most throughout the two-hour hearing that occurred about the contested enhancements that there was no intent and that he did not have any intent or likelihood in carrying out the threats that he made to the Chicago Public Schools. The intent was important not only because in the sentencing guideline that applied to this, the Sentencing Commission specifically said in a background note that it was meant to cover a wide variety of cases and that the seriousness really depended on the intent and the likelihood of carrying out the threat.
But it's, you know, I mean, certainly the people who received these letters would have had no way of knowing that. The disruption that he caused and the methodology, let's say, he chose for voicing his objections to the police presence in his neighborhood was pretty awful. And then later it comes to the district court's attention that he's had a habit of writing some pretty terrible things. I'm thinking of the things on his computer when it was seized.
Right. Well, the record indicates that, and the PSR included certain letters that had been written to other people. But the important thing for the district court to focus on and what it was asked to focus on was the crime that Mr. Farris was about to be punished for. And specifically, the letters that he wrote in this case were unique in that not only did the letters have behind it no subjective intent to carry through, but Mr. Farris took action in order to try to let others know that these were not intended to be taken seriously and that he was actually trying to mitigate the fear in the victims. We know that this actually worked to a large extent because when the police found the letters initially, they were able to very quickly discern that these threats were not real. In fact, by the 17th, 2 days after the threats were received at the school, the school issued a very general letter to the parents, not even saying what was the content of the letters received by the schools, but that anonymous threats had been received by some schools. But we believe that there's no that these essentially are a false alarm.
It must have been a great source of comfort to the parents to receive that.
And I agree that if the parents or if there was any indication that the parents knew what was inside of those letters.
Well, it's just that it's even worse when they just say there was a threat, but we don't think it's real. Why bother telling anybody?
The argument that we made was that, first, of course, the school
had to
let the parents know, and that would be the right thing for them to do.
Sure. But what I'm saying is that you're not easing the parents' horror about the whole thing or nervousness by saying, you know, we're not sure this is a legitimate threat.
And I understand that, and I do believe that is...
So did the judge.
And that's why, of course, the fact that Mr. Ferris was receiving so many different enhancements, and essentially all of the different enhancements that he was receiving, a total of 15 levels that were disputed by the plea that was entered in May, ended up putting him in a range that was enormously high. And what the main argument, though, that we were making was that the court needed to at least look at the intent, the motivation, and perhaps not very effective ways to try to make the recipients not feel fear, but at least that was the intent of the sender. The fact that the district court, when it issued its actual sentence, said, maybe more than most, I wish in this case there was another way, is the inadequate part of the record that the court did not explain and that we cannot speculate as to what it meant. When it said, maybe more than most, I wish there was another way, does that mean that the court was thinking that it was bound by the guidelines? Did it mean that it didn't accept the arguments that were being made? The problem is that the record as it stands is unclear and doesn't explain, especially and in light of 2 hours' worth of arguments where continuously the same theme was being addressed, and also arguments as to the nature and the circumstances behind the offense, including the neighborhood that was overrun with gangs and violent crimes that was virtually going unchecked by the police at that time, was part of the problem.
I knew there was something in here. In his comments at sentencing, the judge seems to me to reflect that he was paying attention. You had argued to him that intent was an important factor, and the judge actually says that he wants to fully examine the real reason why this happened, why you chose this route, a criminal route, to accomplish whatever you were trying to accomplish. And I think you have to assess what were you trying to accomplish. To me, that reflects, you had just finished saying, you know, the intent wasn't there, and then there's a little bit with his own statement and other people in the courtroom. But I'm not sure that this wasn't fully appreciated by the district court judge, and he just decided that the kind of damage that's done, thank heaven nothing worse, but there was certainly damage done from this behavior, and the judge decided it deserved a serious sentence.
I agree that the court appeared to be listening to some of the arguments that were made and made some statements that indicated that perhaps, as Your Honor said, it considered it. But first, we are speculating as to whether or not the court was considering the arguments and what arguments it was finding persuasive or not. But more importantly, the court made a very unexpected comment that related to sex offender treatment in the Bureau of Prisons that, frankly, was unexpected, especially because it followed the court specifically and explicitly saying time and time again that it was not going to consider a certain matter that had been brought up by a supplemental report as well as during the sentencing argument by the government.
The court knew that he was a convicted sex offender, right? He already had a prior on that, didn't he?
He did have a prior from 1992 that included that, but the way
you
that...
You throw all these conditions into the hopper, you know, drug treatment conditions and with a prior on sex offender, it must have gone into the criminal history calculation, unless it was too old.
I would disagree only in that the only part on the record about his prior conviction indicated that Mr. Ferris and a co-defendant were charged and were found guilty, and it's very general in essentially who carried out what part in that crime. But more than that, I don't think that we can separate the fact that it was raised and the issue of a sex offense or a pending sex charge had been raised so many times, and the court was so clear about the fact that it was not going to consider it, and it would not, that then to have that comment without further explanation surrounding it is what made that comment inadequate as it stood, and it just needs more explanation. I see that my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kim. We'll hear now from Mr. Fox.
May it please the court, as this court's case law has made clear since Booker, a guideline sentence is presumptively reasonable, and that's what the district court gave Mr. Ferris in this case. Ms. Kim focuses on the lack of intent, and of course the guidelines do have a consideration. If there was intent, that Mr. Ferris would have seen a higher guideline sentence, significantly higher guideline sentence, by 6 levels. And although he pled guilty to 2 counts, he stipulated to the offenses of counts 3, 4, and 5, and it was very clear the government was conceding that because we knew that his guideline range was 100 to 125. Therefore, if we knew that there was an intent there, we'd have had Mr. Ferris plead guilty to more than just counts 1 and 2. And
or else you'd have to try it.
Or else we'd have to, exactly, yeah. Your Honor. But he did stipulate to the offenses, so that was, I mean, he
couldn't make
it.
Plead is what I was, you said.
Correct. Correct, and perhaps my words were not correct there, but if you look at the other factors along with intent, if Ms. Kim is saying, well, you know, Judge Holdman should have looked at just the intent in mitigation, you'd also have to look at some of the things in aggravation that were considered under the guidelines in order to construct a reasonable sentence under 3553A, and there were, of course, a lot of aggravating factors here. The fact that there were 5 different letters to 5 different schools, the vulnerability of the victims here, the number of students involved in this, and the fact that he did threaten a teacher as well in one of these. Also, with intent, the guidelines builds in, there are different levels. You've got intent, no intent, first of all, of course, and that's the lowest level. Then you've got conduct evidencing an intent to commit a crime, and here there was no conduct. So, again, it was just built into the guidelines. That's my point in there. As far as the sex offender treatment goes, he did have the prior offense. I know that you had asked that question. And it was an aggravated sexual abuse offense. In the PSR, it was stated that during the course of an armed robbery, he touched the buttocks and a breast of the victim. And along with that, and I think that is very relevant to whether sex offender treatment is appropriate here, he wrote that alarming letter to his niece where he talks about wanting to commit sexual acts with his niece, acting like he's a teacher and saying that he's stalking her. So there were a lot of things that showed that Mr. Ferris is in need of sexual offender treatment.
This was discussed all in the PSR, right?
Correct. Yeah. And in fact, in the government version, there were attachments that that had that letter in there that you could review. So it was reasonably related, the sex offender treatment was reasonably related to the factors in 3553A, and that's all that is needed there.
But Ms. Kim has argued, I mean, that there was this other, I guess, set of pending charges that he had said he wasn't going to take into account, and without a more complete explanation from him, there was some question, I guess, about what motivated that condition.
The judge did not say the reason why I'm setting this condition is because of your past offense and because of the letter to the niece. But he also did say, which I think is important, on 3 occasions that he was not going to consider the arrest at all for the sex offense, the one that he was not convicted of. So I guess Ms. Kim's point is she thinks that the judge was being disingenuous there. And I don't know how an appellate court can read into whether a judge was being disingenuous. I mean, we take the record for what it is, and there's no sense from reading the record that he was being disingenuous. He said
I thought you just meant maybe he changed his mind and didn't tell anybody, and so there was no opportunity for any kind of exchange on the point.
If you look at the record after he discusses the sex offender treatment, there's no objection from the defense on that point. And if you look at the opening brief, the opening brief does not say that this was an inappropriate condition at all. It's only in the reply brief and on argument where Ms. Kim says, well, maybe this is an inappropriate consideration because he was not deserving of sex offender treatment. So it's not to me, she's not saying that he's not in need of it and it's not useful in his rehabilitation. She's saying, well, look at that in determining that the judge considered that in factoring Mr. Ferris to 120 months. And I think, again, that it's she's saying that the judge is being disingenuous, and I don't think that we can read that from the record at all. So if there are no further questions, I just ask you to affirm the sentence of Milo Ferris. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fox. You had used your time, Ms. Kim, so the case will be taken under advisement with our thanks to both attorneys. The court has finished the calendar of the day, and therefore we will rise until 9:30 tomorrow.